You're listening to Team Talk on ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team.
Joe Neal and Sam Hauser with you. If you missed any of the parts that we have here on Team Talk, you can go to 1017theteam.com, and we archive a lot of these segments for you there, so you can listen to it kind of on demand. One thing that we have every single day is yesterday's top five. So speaking of top five, Sam Hauser, take it away.
Initialize sequence now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're now in the approach phase. Everything looking good.
It's time for the Hinkle Law Office's Top 5. Hinkle Law Office is representing motorcycle riders across New Mexico since 1990. Visit HinkleLawOffices.com. Take it away, Sam Hauser.
It's a very newsy Top 5 today. I don't know how I feel about it, and of course, the only person I could talk to about that would be me, which would be... You know, nobody wants to hear somebody talking to themselves, but there's just so much going on over the weekend between the NCAA tournament and everything else that it just ends up being a very newsy top five today. So, as we always do, we'll start with who's in, who's out. That's always number five in the world of sports, and who's in is always up first. And Lobo Baseball getting a Series W at Santa Ana Star Field over the weekend. Lobos taking 2 out of 3 against San Jose State, ending with a literal bang in the second half of a doubleheader on Saturday. Lobos win 17-4 in run rule fashion. Senior catcher Jake Holland going deep twice with 7 RBI. And on the mound, a couple native New Mexicans getting the job done for the Lobos. You had Centennial High School grad and former NMSU Aggie Will Bannister getting the start. And then true freshman Ryan Castillo, who was pitching at Los Lunas High School last year, nearly perfect in 5 shutout innings. He pitched the last 5 innings of the game, gets the win as a true freshman. And the Lobos, it's, you know, a lot left to play, but the Lobos 6-3 in the Mountain West in a 4-way tie for the lead at the top of the Mountain West.
What a start for Ryan Castillo, former Los Lunas Tigers. Shout out to the folks there in Valencia County, man. What an outing. We got to keep an eye on that local kid. And the reason they played the doubleheader on Saturday, normally they're playing Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, is because the weather was going to be so bad yesterday, which it was.
Yes, it was.
They're like, hey, it's going to be nice enough to play two. Let's go ahead and play two. The Lobos, like you said, at the top of the Mountain West standings. There's 7 teams in the Mountain West Baseball Conference, and you got to be in the top 5 in order to go to San Diego and play in the conference tournament, which is down the road. But the Lobos off to a very good start. Good on Todd Brown, their head coach. All right, what else there, Sammy?
And that's where the Lobos are this coming weekend. They'll play a 3-game set Thursday, Friday, Saturday this week at San Jose State. Going to the other end of the country, the complete opposite end, from the West Coast to the East, the Lobos men's golf team out in South Carolina in a tournament that is going on here as we speak. But an unbelievable first round for New Mexico, going 15 under as a team to take the lead after the first round. Got the second round going on here and finishing up, and still in first place in this 15-team field is your New Mexico Lobos. Again, this going on in South Carolina. Lobos currently sitting with a 2-shot lead over LSU and a 10-shot lead over third-place Purdue.
Do we have any Lobos that are near the top when it comes to individual-type scoring?
Oh, we do better than near the top. We have a Lobo at the top. Matthew Watkins.
Watkins is at the top.
Matthew Watkins with, I want to make sure I got this here. Matthew Watkins with the low round of the day in a field of more than 80 golfers. Nobody had a better round today than Matthew Watkins. 6 under 66. He currently has a 1-shot lead going into the final round tomorrow. So he is in first. Albert Bonetta, who's been red hot
this
year.
Yes, he has.
He's had a great start. He is currently tied for 3rd, 2 shots off the lead. You got Connor Adams tied for 10th, and we keep going on down the line. You got him there. You got him and Connor Adams and Carson Heron both. So 4 Lobos in the top 10 in the leaderboard.
Who says the Lobos can't play
can't play at sea level?
And that part of the country. And by the way, that tournament in South Carolina has something to do with the Hootie and the Blowfish type
it
tournament.
Does,
I mean, every college in the country must want to play in that, much less be winning like the Lobos are, right? Isn't Darius Rucker somehow attached to that?
The name of the tournament is Hootie at Bulls Bay at Bulls Bay Golf Club there in South Carolina.
And that is called the Low Country, by the way.
That is correct.
We are called like the Rocky Mountains and the Mile High area. That is called the Low Country. And obviously the Lobos can play at the Low Country as well. What is number four? Or who's out, Sammy? Who's out?
Yeah, low on the scoreboard is what the Lobos are with one round still to go. All right, well, speaking of the Lobos, as we go on to who is out, it is transfer portal time in college basketball. The portal actually opened 1 week ago today, which is just a completely stupid move, and you're asking for trouble. But we do finally have some Lobos and some Mountain West players that have gone into the transfer portal over the last 24 hours or so, starting with Jamal Mashburn Jr. Last season, the leading scorer in the Mountain West. This year, the numbers taking a dip, still about 14 points a game. But Jamal Mashburn Jr. going to be a graduate transfer. He was part of senior night for the Lobos, and he did still have another year of eligibility as a graduate student, but he will go play that graduate year somewhere else. And Sebastian Forsling also gone portaling.
Yeah, and even though Mashburn had another year of eligibility, nobody kind of assumed he would be around next year, unlike Jalen House at this time last year. We knew it had another year of eligibility. We felt pretty good about him coming back for another year. So, like I said before, everybody wishes Jamal Mashburn the very best as he goes and does his thing somewhere else. What else is out, Sam?
All right, Rytus Petraitis from Air Force also going into the portal. Second consecutive year that Coach Joe Scott loses a quality player after his sophomore year. Last year was Jake Heidbreder, who went over to Clemson, did not play this year. Now Rytus Petraitis, top 10 in the Mountain West in scoring, assists, steals, and blocks. The rule there at the academy is you have until the start of your junior year to leave. Otherwise, you are essentially committing yourself to the academy and then eventually after that to the United States Air Force, which is why both these guys left after their sophomore seasons.
Yeah, so even Air Force being dealing with the free agency, so to speak. And what else is out Sammy?
Strange situation over the weekend in the first round of the NCAA women's tournament.
Is this whole official thing?
Yes, this is the story that we teased here before the break from the first round of the women's tournament. The game ends with North Carolina State beating the Chattanooga Mocs by 19. It was a 9-point game at the half for NC State. They go on and win, but at halftime when it was a 9-point game, one of the officials was pulled from the game after it was found out that she was a graduate of Chattanooga. And I say that because that is exactly how the story was worded. Apparently, we went into this game with not knowing the backgrounds of our officials. I don't know how they found out between when the game started and halftime, but somebody got word that she is an alum of Chattanooga, so they had to yank her at halftime.
Maybe an LSU fan was like, hey, I used to go to Tennessee Chattanooga. She was one of my classmates. I had biology with her. So anyway, they made this adjustment in the middle of the game.
Yeah, they had to bring in another alternate rep. That's one of the reasons why, you know, you always have alternate referees at a game. Not particularly for a case like this, but when you need one,
right.
You have an
sprained
alternate
ankle,
referee.
Alumni, you know, is
same thing.
You know, you never know when you might need a fourth official, Sam.
Same thing, exactly.
So, but regardless, I didn't say irregardless because that's one of my pet peeves, okay? Regardless, LSU was winning the game to begin with and ended up winning the game at the end, right?
Yeah, and NC State.
Oh, I'm sorry. NC State was winning the game.
And they win by 19.
Okay. Yeah, I had LSU and Kim Mulkey on the brain.
Well, we got more about her.
Okay. So, anyway, you got an official that's alum of a school. Better to pick one of the other officials out there. All right. Are we at number four, Sam?
Cool. We sure are. All right, well, there's only one Mountain West team left in the NCAA tournament, but two are still playing and having their seasons alive. We'll start in the Big Dance. San Diego State back in the Sweet 16 after just thrashing Yale and kicking those Ivy League boys around the schoolyard. 85 to 57 the final score. Don't imagine there's a lot of Jaden Ledees running around the Ivy League for Utah for Yale to try to practice or try to get a gauge of.
No, you're not going to be able to have a scout team that's going to, all right, you play Jaden Ledee here, and we'll see if we're able to defend. No,
literally, just to put shoulder pads on.
Hey, they still have to win the game. They still have to play the game.
They
did do that, and you know, man, they're going to have to face UConn, right?
UConn is next in the Sweet 16 rematch of last year's Natty. Big story of the game: San Diego State 13 of 27. From behind the three-point line, that performance, just to show what an outlier this is, San Diego State's been an awful three-point shooting team all year. If they take more than 20 in a game, you're usually feeling pretty good about yourself, except for a case like last night. But that performance, going about 50% from deep, that performance finally moved the Aztecs inside the top 300 in the country in three-point shooting, now 292nd. In college basketball.
So you're saying, like, they didn't go 5 of 9, you know, like, it wasn't a small sample size. They jacked 27 of them.
And made 13
of them. Yeah, that'll help those numbers. Inside the top 300. All right, what else there, Sam?
All right, well, UNLV got to host the second round of the NIT at the Thomas and Mack. Attendance announced at around 5,500 because, you know, of course, you got to buy different tickets for this game. The whole season ticket, not part of that whole deal. But the Rebels get the win. 79-70, UNLV wins over Boston College. Dedon Thomas, the co-sixth man of the year, was great. 17 points, 7 of 11 shooting. The Boone brothers doing it up big. 35 points between the two of them. Caleb Boone coming off the bench in this one, which was a really clever move there by Coach Kruger to have him come off the bench. Worked out perfectly.
Crowd went nuts, by the way. And although there were 5,500, they had a tight shot. I watched the game. They were very tight.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't like they were showing the stands at the Thomas and Mack during the Mountain West Conference tournament. A very tight shot on the court, but a very engaged crowd of 5,500. That core UNLV fan base showed up because now they're one game away from going to Indianapolis in their NIT Final Four, Sam.
Yeah, got to go right back to the East Coast. So,
and a fun team to watch, a fun team to root for,
no question,
too. I mean, you got this freshman that should still be in high school, and these two brothers that played in high school in 2019. And then Jackie Johnson Jr. I mean, you don't know what you're going to see when you're watching the Rebs. Some nights they score 55. Some nights they score, what did they score last night? 87?
79.
79, close enough.
Yep.
All right, well, anyway.
All three games to this point in the NIT for UNLV against East Coast schools. They beat Princeton in the first round, had to go out to New Jersey. Then they beat Boston College at home. Now they've got to go all the way right back out there. Wednesday, the quarterfinals at Seton Hall.
Yeah, I think they had 85 against Princeton. That's what I was thinking.
Right.
Yeah, no, they've been putting up some numbers. All right. What else there, Sammy?
All right. Well, Purdue doing to Utah State what San Diego State did to Yale, just kicking them around and shoving their face in the dirt. Utah State gets blown out by Purdue, and now it ends up being Danny Sprinkle's final game at Utah State. Took the open job at Washington earlier today, so Utah State now has to hire another coach. This will be their fourth head coach in 5 years there in Logan, Utah.
Yeah, and the weird thing about this is that Stu Morrill, okay, so they've had, this will be their fifth coach in five years.
Yep.
They had a coach that was there for a couple years before Craig Smith.
Yeah.
All right. But then Stu Morrill was there for, I think we counted, 17 years. So just like there's free agency when it comes to the players and the portal and all that kind of stuff, Utah State has experienced free agency themselves there when it comes to their coaches, especially when you consider 17 years Stu Morrill, three different conferences I think they were in. One thing that was a constant, it was Stu Morrill. Since then, it's just been all these different guys, and all four of them have done very well.
And two of them are now going to play each other, so get this.
Three of them have done very well.
So Wednesday, 5 o'clock is UNLV's quarterfinal game at Seton Hall. After that, You got the Aggie Bowl because it's Ryan Odom at VCU and Craig Smith at Utah. They're going to meet in the NIT quarterfinals in Salt Lake City. The last two Utah State coaches now doing very well at their respective schools.
No kidding. All right. Irony there. No doubt about it. Nice job on that, Sammy. What else are we at? Number three or anything else to clean up?
Well, you hit on this earlier, but just for a little bit more historical context to go along with it, Gonzaga, despite some ups and downs, and they certainly had, by their standards, plenty of downs in the regular season. January comes around, and we're not even sure if Gonzaga is going to get in the NCAA tournament. Well, of course, once you get there, Gonzaga taking care of business. They're in the Sweet 16. The ninth consecutive Sweet 16 for Mark Few and the Zags. It's actually the third longest streak in Division I men's basketball history, only behind the magnificent legendary run that Duke went on in the 80s and into the 90s. They went 13 times in a row to the Sweet 16, and then, of course, John Wooden's Bruins, 14 in a row, but now on their tail is Mark Few and Gonzaga.
When UCLA was getting to the Sweet 16,
they probably had to win one game to get there.
I was going
to
say, yeah, 32 teams in it, and hey, win one game, you're in the Sweet. No, hey, it is what it is, Sam. It is what it is there. All right. What is a number? What? And by the way, we mentioned Gonzaga, the team that won, like the team that was considered the best team in the West Coast Conference.
Don't remind me.
St. Mary's. Did you have St. Mary's in your bracket winning the national championship?
Not quite.
Well,
going
you
that
didn't
far.
Find out that they lost to Grand Canyon, Sam.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm the one that talked this into existence. I kept saying last week, I got a sneaky feeling about this one. It was a 5-12. We know how those always go, and I went against my own pick. Yeah, Grand Canyon beat them, and St. Mary's one and done.
What's number three, Sammy?
Well, going back to yesterday again, Purdue just almost no words to describe it. This final score, 106-67. Purdue beats Danny Sprinkle in Utah State. Zach Edey with 23 points and 14 rebounds. And so, you know, Zach Edey is an interesting character as it stands right now in the world of basketball, because I can't think of a lot of examples in recent memory. There are mock drafts that have Zach Edey as a lottery pick. There are mock drafts that have Zach Edey as borderline even getting drafted into the NBA, because there's questions about his basketball fundamentals when he's not just bigger than everybody else in the NBA. And so Purdue head coach Matt Painter asked about that. You know, what would you say to people who just look at Zach Edey and just say that he's big, independent of his basketball acumen?
You see people, you know, around the country, even, you know, fans, but even people that cover the game say he's just tall. What would you say to the people that say that are only looking at the size and not just the game?
Yeah, they just shouldn't cover basketball. I just think everybody should, like, take tests on their knowledge of what they're doing. Like, I think all coaches should take a test so they understand refereeing. And I think all referees should take a test so they understand coaching. And I think all journalists should have to take a basketball quiz or a test, or anybody that tweets, they should have to be able to do it. And if they say something so moronic as that, then they should have to have a probationary status where they can't tweet for like 3 months. I think it'll help like society, you know, like just try to knock out the fools, you know, so they don't have to, you know, meet at the local Walmart and say things that don't make any sense.
So, did you sense a little frustration there of answering a question he's been asked a million times about his big man, and people trying to say he's the beneficiary of officiating and other things, and Painter wouldn't have any of that, and he came pretty strong there, Sam.
Yeah, I'm going to have to leave my comments about Zach Edey to myself after that.
You get your ex account revolt.
I don't know what I would do with myself. If I couldn't go on Twitter for 3 months, I'd jump out a window.
Hey, real quick, going back to the Lopes of Grand Canyon.
Yes.
I mean, in the game against St. Mary's, they were showing all the people that had made the trip to Spokane, and then they showed like an arena full of people at home there,
right,
in Phoenix area watching their games. And then that was the same last night. I mean, what a bandwagon those people have jumped on. And people forget that it's been an incredible home court advantage, not just the last year or two, but like the last 5 or 6 years. Those Loafs fans are turning out, Sam. Yeah, Grand Canyon, you got Bryce Drew as the head coach and got a little bit of money there, I think, in the coffer. And don't think this is a one and done for Grand Canyon. And we have a kid who's keeping it local, the kid from Las Cruces High School, the big 6'10 kid.
Yes, yes.
That was played in the state championship game for Las Cruces High against, I think his last name is Carr, or what it's something like that. You're finding it. I know,
yes,
you're right on it.
I believe you're right about that. Isaiah Carr?
That sounds about right. We're getting to it right now. But anyway, a former Las Cruces Bulldog that played with Deuce Benjamin, played Volcano Vista in the state championship game. One of the great games, went into overtime. He went to Grand Canyon. Who are we talking about?
So he actually transferred to the University of Denver this year, okay. Isaiah Carr.
Okay, well, I'm glad I went down that road. Isaiah Carr was recruited by Grand Canyon, went to Grand Canyon, now he's at the University of Denver. What is number two, Sam?
By the way, Grand Canyon.
Two.
Home win over San Diego State in the non-conference earlier
this
year.
No, I remember that one. It was a tight one, and everybody's like, oh, how good is San Diego State going to be when they play? You know, that loss, I think, actually was like helped them with their non-conference schedule. It was the best non-conference road game, I think, San Diego State played. All right.
All right. Well, we did hear from Shohei Ohtani earlier today. Well, we heard from Shohei Ohtani's new interpreter. Remember, the Dodgers fired Ipe Mitsuhara last week among all the allegations of illegal sports betting, of Mitsuhara being tied up with an illegal bookie, of Shohei Ohtani's people saying that Mitsuhara stole $4.5 million from him to pay off this illegal bookie. But however you cut it, when you're involved, even if you're indirectly involved in something in 2024, the longer you go without talking, the more people are just going to assume your automatic guilt in a situation. So Shohei Ohtani speaking today through an interpreter here just about an hour ago, and this was a little bit of what was said earlier today.
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf, and I have never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports. Up until a couple of days ago, I didn't know that this was happening.
So that in itself is a problem. Up until a few days ago, he didn't know this is happening. I mean, my biggest question is still why Ipe Mitsuhara had access to Shohei Ohtani's bank account in the first place. And yeah, I mean, I guess if you're that rich, maybe you don't need to check your account every day to make sure there's no overdraft fees, but to say that I didn't know this is happening is not great either.
No, it's not. And that, yeah, I still think there's going to be a lot coming. Okay, so we're basically saying, and we talked about how, well, first of all right, we have players that have been around these two guys. Epi was his last.
Ipe Mitsuhara.
Ipe, okay. Ipe and Shohei. And people that saw them together, guys that played with them with the Angels, said you could not have found two better friends. Like, not only was he the translator, but they got along great at the same time. And they were, you know, they lived together, I think, all those kind of things. So it was talked about how naive that Shohei was about everything outside of, like, you know, showing up at the ballpark and being one of the greatest players that ever lived at this point. But are we being a little naive to think that I actually could see where Shohei might give this guy access to his bank account? I mean, I'm willing to believe that. But also, are we being naive to think that, like, all these, spending so much time with this guy, he would not have picked up on the fact that the guy was gambling enough where he incurred millions of dollars in debt? I don't know. And I think some of it may come out when Ipe is, he's going to be charged, right? Gambling is
most likely, yes.
Okay, so if he is charged, you know he's going to have a defense attorney that is going to get the full story. And if it can possibly, if Shohei didn't abide by the rules like he just said he did, and we'll believe that for what he said, then this is where this stuff gets really, really potentially ugly. That's what I'm saying. Are we being naive to think, even though Shohei trusted this guy a ton, that he had no clue that the guy was betting on sports?
No, it's a totally...
And it was a dangerous thing based on, you know, what he knew, playing in Major League Baseball? I don't know.
No, it's a totally fair question. I mean, I guess without being around there, if Ipe Mitsuhara has just got that demeanor about him of somebody who can kind of just go about life having lost all that gambling money, but regardless, you just, the thing that you worry about with Shohei as this does move forward, because the IRS is involved, there's
sure
multiple government agencies involved, Major League Baseball's investigating. I mean, you just worry about, even if he legitimately didn't know what was going on, you just worry about Shohei being viewed as complicit in what might come with that.
Yeah, I mean, gambling crossing state lines, gambling crossing continent. I mean, there's just, it goes on and on and on. All right, what is number one there, Sammy? This has been kind of a news report type day.
Yeah, it's very newsy top five, but there was
a lot of good stuff in there,
news,
Sammy,
over the weekend, and we're not getting any less in the muck and the weed of things with people potentially getting in trouble, potential agents, lawsuits, or other things potentially getting involved, because Kim Mulkey, the head women's basketball coach at LSU, the defending national champion, a lot more than just bouncy balls to worry about here these days.
What do you tell your team to get there now?
Make free throws and layups. If I was watching this game, I'd turn it off. Look at that score, would you? That's some bad offensive basketball. It might be something to these balls being too bouncy. But
well, there was a time when the balls being too bouncy was the biggest of her concerns.
Good point.
Now far from it, as there are reports over the weekend. And look, there is still so much more about this than we don't know than what we do know, but there are reports that have been surfacing over the last couple of days of a potential Washington Post story that would not have Kim Mulkey come out in the best of light. Kim Mulkey has already said that she's got a defamation attorney on retainer, basically ready to go to come out and sue the Washington Post, but she did make a statement about it over the weekend. Again, just about this story, we don't know what's going to be in it. We don't know what it's about. We just know that there's a potential story in the works in the Washington Post that has been years in the making that would not be good news for Kim Mulkey.
I wouldn't normally discuss media rumors about me, but I felt the need to publicly address what exactly this reporter for the Washington Post has been doing the past several years, and the lengths he has gone to try and put a hit piece together. This reporter has been working on a story about me for 2 years. After 2 years of trying to get me to sit with him for an interview, he contacts LSU on Tuesday as we were getting ready for the first round game of this tournament with more than a dozen questions, demanding a response by Thursday, right before we're scheduled to tip off. Are you kidding me? This was a ridiculous deadline that LSU and I could not possibly meet, and the reporter knew it. It was just an attempt to prevent me from commenting and an attempt to distract us from this tournament. It ain't gonna work, buddy.
That's how you stick the landing.
Oh! It ain't gonna work, buddy.
Okay. Well, I'd love to know what the 12 questions were, number one. And the reporter that she's talking about is a guy named Kent Babb, who she said she wouldn't sit down with him because he wrote a piece on Brian Kelly, the head coach at LSU.
Yeah, so he wrote a piece a few years ago about, and I don't even know if you would really call it a hit piece, and it's also not the only example of this in the country, but it was basically just a whole story in the Washington Post about how much more money Brian Kelly was making as the football coach than some of the most important people in government in the state of Louisiana.
And you could do that virtually every state.
Most of them, yes.
Including this one, by the way. It's all in proportion, obviously.
Right.
What I think she knows he's doing is she's aware that he's talking. Going back to all the players that had played for her, she goes back a long way, Louisiana Tech and then Baylor, blah, blah, blah. And more than likely, 80% of them had good things to say about Kim Mulkey. But when there's 20% that didn't like her, you know, didn't get playing time, you know, something, whatever, like, That's a lot of players when you've been coaching as long as she had. So yeah, she's trying to get out in front of it. Obviously, I don't think that this guy put those questions in front of LSU in an attempt so that they would fail at LSU. I mean, maybe this guy does. Maybe he's a Georgia fan or something like that and hates LSU. I don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see this thing unfold in the coming weeks, Sam. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, if the story, from what I can gather, if the story is going to come out, if we don't get some defamation lawsuit first, it's supposed to be sometime in the next week or so. Like, by the time we come back for Top 5 next Monday, there's a good chance we'll know what this story is about.